Psalm 135, verses 15 through 18. The idols of the nations are silver and gold, the work of human hands. They have mouths, but they do not speak. They have eyes, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear. And there is no breath in their mouths. Those who make them and all who trust them shall become like them. And that is the word of God for the people of God this morning. There's something about winning awards and awards programs that really fascinate us. I can remember when I was younger and those award shows would come on, and it was typically what got to me was either the Grammys or the Oscars, and they always drew the most attention, and there's a certain amount of excitement about who was being nominated and what they were being nominated for, the category for which their nomination was made. And there was this heightened excitement when the time came for the big awards. And I mean, the best supporting role was okay. It was fine. I mean, yeah, you got your little statue, but who was being nominated for the best? That was the one that really got the adrenaline going. The best actress, the best actor, the best artist, the best vocalist, the best group. And because those were the ones that were at the top of their game. And for the most part, except in sporting events where the winner is chosen by a final score, whoever gets the award actually comes about as a matter of choice. And often it doesn't matter who or what some people say the winner should be. We actually make up our minds about who should get the award by our own internal loyalties and comparisons. And we choose our award winner based on those criteria. For instance, if I was talking to the right group of people about classic cars, and I asked them, of all of the cars that have ever been made, which do you think is the most classic? Would it be the 54 Chevy or the 64 Shelby Cobra Mustang? And everyone engaged in the argument would make their choice. If I were to ask another group of people, which gold between white gold or yellow gold or rose gold or the new chocolate gold would you award as the most popular? And I'm certain that there would be those who would have their opinions, and I could probably generate some spirited conversations if I were to ask, who in your mind would win the award for the greatest baseball player, the greatest pitcher, the running back in football, the soccer star, the point guard in basketball, the president of the United States, or any of a number of other fields where there are lots of choices? I'm sure that each of us would do our comparisons and then make our choices based on what we thought. But if we had to honestly answer the question about which God won the award for coming in first in our lives, we might in fact be hard pressed to truthfully answer the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. We might find that many of us have drifted into the practice of idolatry in our lives without even knowing it, and that while God might be the obvious hands-down winner, our God is not often treated as the first place winner, not even with us. We like to think of idols as statues, as immobile and dead symbols of things that have in reality no power over us. And yet we give those immobile and dead symbols of things that power. And we give them that power because we believe that we get something out of them. We believe they provide us with something that we don't typically get out of life, or maybe even the God that we worship. And the more power we give them, the more likely they are to get that nod in our lives for the award of honor. That's where the writer of our text begins. He begins with the idea that idols, unlike our God, are in fact nothing more than things which have assumed first place in the lives of some people because they have given those idols that power in their lives. And at the time of the writing of this song, this 135th psalm, it was the belief that Israel's God dwelt in the heavens and that Israel's God was real but invisible. It was also their view that the gods of the nations were not real, but simply visible symbols of lifeless, weak, and impotent representatives. The images of their gods were frequently made of wood and then overlaid with gold or silver to give their gods the appearance of having some value, but who were in essence nothing more than the work of men's hands. It would appear that after all of these years, we might have gotten away from that, but that's not the case. Our culture has been on the move, developing our own idols to which we give praise and honor and worship. Shiny and not so shiny gods that enter into our lives and receive the first place award, even over the God we say we serve. Now, maybe it's at this point I think I disagree with Scripture, and I say that I don't totally disagree. I agree that idols are made by the work of men's and women's hands, and I agree that some of them have mouths, but some of them don't, and they do speak to us, not openly, but in the backs of our subconscious minds, calling to us in sounds inaudible to anyone else but us. And I agree that there is no breath in their mouths, those who have mouths, but they seem to be alive when they call to us, at times giving us a life that we're led to believe we want more of. Perhaps that's why people will line up and wait for hours through cold and rain and the threat of robbery while their idol, that proverbial iPhone, calls out to them with a voice that is unheard. That new iPhone, come get me. You've got to have me. Come get me now. And people will rush and stand in line and wait for it for days. That's a great example of 21st century idolatry. But it goes beyond that. Because the truth is, we all surround ourselves with things that we choose to give first place to in our lives. And in some very real ways, those things become our gods. Sometimes they are shiny and sometimes they aren't. I know we don't start out with those intentions. We probably start out with the idea that we will just indulge ourselves a little, trying to make sure we don't lose that delicate sense of balance in our lives, trying to make sure that we can honor God while at the same time enjoy the blessings that we've received from God. And so we prioritize, always on the hunt for that balance, because we need that balance. And then we find ourselves in an unusual place. The thing that we're hunting for suddenly takes over our lives, consuming it. And we end up living out the words to that old song and asking ourselves the question, what's this old world coming to? Things just ain't the same. Anytime the hunter gets captured by the game. And when the hunter gets captured by the game, Then idolatry has captured us and taken priority in our lives, and we look up and find that God is no longer first, or perhaps that God never was first, but that something or someone has always come before God. It just might be interesting for us to ask the question, who or what does the award go to as the first place winner in our lives? I know what it used to be for me. And it started out so innocently. I always loved music, and I just wanted to listen to some music. And a friend that I worked with wanted me to hear an album that he thought I would be interested in, and I basically said, you know, I don't really have a good record player that I could hear it. He said, record player? Well, why don't you come over to my house and hear my system? I said, system? He said, yeah, I've got a component system. Why don't you come over and listen to it? And he put this record on. And the sound. Oh boy, the sound was better than anything I had ever heard before. The highs were clear and bright. The lows were full-bodied and resounding and not muddied or mumbling or booming. The vocals were so clear you could even hear the artist take a breath. I could hear every nuance, every little syllable that was being sung, and I could even hear the artist taking a breath, as I said before, and he said, this is what you can hear when you have components. And I thought, oh, I've got to have it. I had never heard of component stereo systems before, and all I knew about was a little Magnavox, a record player in a box, and that was all I listened to. But when I left his house, I knew I had to have one of those things, one of those component systems. And without warning, music systems became my God, and it became a God that I willingly honored and praised daily. And I was scouring magazines and making endless trips to a record shop that was on Westport Road called David Beatty's, and I would take my albums to David Beatty's, and we'd go to several different rooms, and he would show me different systems, and I'd put on my records and I'd listen to them, and I was captivated until finally one day I got my God, a Yamaha CR620 stereo receiver with true tune, high treble and low and mid-range. And I got a Beogram 3000 turntable, the only turntable that was ever made that's in the Smithsonian Institute. And my Sirwin Vega 211R direct rear reflecting speakers. And I was in heaven. And I would worship that God every single day. When I got off work, I would come home and worship that God. Before I went to work, I would worship that God. And then on Friday, on paydays, just to make sure that I honored my God, before I'd even cash my check, I would be headed to Tiger's record store where I could pick up new music to take home and listen to so that I could worship my God. Finally, I would sacrifice to my God daily. I would listen to Mozart and Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and Quincy Jones and Miles Davis and Weather Report, The Temptations, Grover Washington Jr., you name them. I had the albums, I listened to them. And when it seemed that my God was getting tired of playing the same old records, I'd go get some more. But alas, it appeared that the God that I worshiped every day was incomplete. It wasn't the God I thought it was. I needed a bigger God. I needed bigger speakers. I needed a bigger receiver. In fact, I needed to separate my receiver so that I got an amplifier and a receiver. And I needed a tape deck. I needed a cassette deck for my cassettes. And I needed a reel-to-reel for my reel-to-reel. And I just needed. And finally, this God consumed me. And the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob disappeared from my list, as if it ever had first place. And if I have to be honest, I'll have to say that at that time, God never was in first place. And so it was much easier to designate the winner of the war to go to the God of my choice, something else besides the God of Abraham. We seem to be attracted to those things which appeal to our senses. And for me, it was a stereo system. I imagine it may have been something different for you. We're not all in love with music, playing it, singing it, listening to it. We have other gods that we've come to worship, gods that have taken over our lives, that have in fact become our lives. There was a movie called Up in the Air in which George Clooney starred, and he appeared at the podium one day and he was talking to a group of people and he said, I want you to imagine yourself with a backpack and you've got to move. But you got to take all of your stuff and put it in this backpack. He says, so start putting your stuff in your backpack. You can take your books and all your important photographs. He said, you might want to leave your photographs for people who can't remember. He said, but don't leave out anything. Your favorite lounge chair, just put it in that backpack. Put your car, don't forget your car, put it in the backpack too. Your house, all of the things you love, just shove them, jam them into that backpack, and now put it on and try to move. It's heavy, isn't it? Said, now start taking stuff out of the backpack. Get rid of all of that stuff you really thought you needed, but you don't need. And he said, and it's liberating, isn't it? To get rid of all of that stuff, all of those little gods that we worship. He claims that letting it all go and waking up in the morning without all of that stuff is liberating. And in some ways it may be liberating, but it would also cause tremendous grief. Recognizing that all of the little gods of iron and stone and cloth and plastic and porcelain and glass were no longer there to support our emotional and mental well-being. Just ask someone who has survived a flood or a fire or a tornado or a hurricane when their property didn't. I imagine that we would experience some tremendous sense of loss, not unlike those people who are combing through the ashes of Maui right now. But in every situation like that, someone always steps up to say, it was just stuff. I've got my life. Thank God, I've got my life. And I would suggest that slowly collecting all of those things actually makes them gods in our lives, that we slowly and unconsciously yield ourselves to their presence until they have first place priority for us and not the God we serve. And I would also say that waking up today, not in the morning, to the reality that maybe, just maybe, we've given first place to more stuff more often and sacrificed more to the gods of our cars and our homes and in vacations, that we just had to take our favorite teams, our families, the love of our nation than we've ever given or sacrificed to our God. And in today's culture, iPhones, Samsung Galaxies, bigger and bigger screen TVs and other gadgets that we've come to worship and praise have been given first place in our lives, and that we've never once think of making that kind of commitment to God. How do I know? Well, the answer is easy. I don't have to look any farther than myself. I left home without my I Got with me and had to go back home to get it. I've also left home because in the busyness of the morning routine, I didn't provide or allow ample time to properly kneel before God and pray. And instead of going back home and saying I need to do that, I just keep on going. What was more important, my phone or offering my prayers to God? Because I can't ever once remember saying while on the way to wherever I was going, I forgot to really pray to God this morning. I'm going to have to go back home and do that. You see, friends, it's so easy to put God in second place or farther back and be satisfied with it. Now, if I were the MC at a large award ceremony, it would be about this time that I would begin to read the list of those who were nominated for the first place award. And after naming the nominees, I'd ask for the envelope. But I'm not at an awards ceremony. But what I'd like you to do this morning is to imagine that each of you has an envelope, a large foil-lined envelope with a wax-sealed ribbon on the outside and the name of who or whatever comes first in your life on the inside. And first you have to read the list of nominees. You know, that list of things that you choose, your book collection, your record collection, your silver collection, your porcelain collection, your bowling team, your basketball team, whatever it is that draws your attention away from God, you have to list those as nominees first. Anything that gets between you and your God in your life. Now, no one gets to open your envelope but you. But when you open the envelope, you and nobody but you will know whose name appears in your envelope. Now get ready to open your envelope. And I guess before I go any further, I should say that if God is at the top of your list and truly in consideration for the first place award, the fact that God is the award winner for you will be reflected by the following categories necessary to give God the award. And the award to God should go to God if God is first in your giving, in your service, in your worship, in your prayers, in your hospitality, and in your witness to others. Don't open your envelope now. But you can begin practicing for the moment that your envelope is open by saying, and the award goes to. And if it's not God, considering our giving and our service and our worship and our witness and our hospitality, then we've got to change some of our priorities. And that's the word of God for the people of God today.